Last week, a student at Rutgers University committed suicide after his sexual encounter with another man was broadcast over the internet. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. That tragedy was the latest in a string of suicides that have apparently resulted from the harassment of gay and lesbian young people. The It Gets Better project was conceived to give these young people hope. Dan Savage is a well-known author and advice columnist. He and his partner recorded the first It Gets Better video.
If there are 14 and 15 and 16-year-olds out there watching this video, what I'd love you to take away from it really is that it gets better. However bad it is now, it gets better.
I'll talk with him about the project, and we'll explore the problem of bullying and harassment of young people in the GLBT community with Ryan Romerman, executive director of the Iowa Pride Network. We'd also like to hear from you after this news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Last week, Tyler Clementi, a student at Rutgers University, committed suicide after his sexual encounter with another man was broadcast over the internet. His death was the latest in a string of suicides that have apparently resulted from the bullying or harassment of gay and lesbian young people. It was in response to the death of one young boy that Dan Savage, a well-known author and advice columnist, he writes the column Savage Love, conceived the It Gets Better project. He and his partner Terry recorded a video together to tell kids who are going through this kind of struggle that if they can get through it, life will get better. Here's an excerpt from their video.
High school was bad. I was Catholic, went to Catholic high schools, Catholic boys' school. My dad was a Catholic deacon, my mom was a Catholic lay minister, and my family was very Catholic. And there were no gay people in my family and no openly gay people at my school, but I was picked on because, you know, I liked musicals and I was obviously gay, and some kids didn't like that, and I did get harassed.
My school was pretty miserable. I lived in Spokane, Washington, which is a mid-sized town with a small town mentality. And I was picked on mercilessly in school. People were really cruel to me. I was bullied a lot, beat up, thrown against walls and lockers and windows, you know, stuffed into bathroom stalls. People scratched my car, broke my windows. And my parents went in once to talk to the school administrators about the harassment I was getting at school, and they basically said, if you look that way, talk that way, walk that way, act that way, then there's nothing we can do to help your son. Honestly, things got better the day I left high school. I didn't see the bullies every day. I didn't see the people who harassed me every day. I didn't have to see the school administrators who would do nothing about it every day. Life instantly got better.
If there are 14 and 15 and 16-year-olds, 13-year-olds, 12-year-olds out there watching this video, what I'd love you to take away from it really is that it gets better. However bad it is now, it gets better. And it can get great, and it can get awesome. Your life can be amazing, but you have to tough this period of it out, and you have to live your life so that you're around for it to get amazing, and it can and it will.
That's an excerpt from the video that Dan Savage and his partner Terry put together for the It Gets Better project. They posted their video and invited other members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered community to post videos about what they went through in high school or in their early years and about how their lives have gotten better. I talked with Dan on his cell phone recently, and I asked him about his inspiration for the project.
There's been a whole rash of suicides beginning in Minnesota. Earlier this year, there was a story in the Minnesota Independent about a kid named Justin Averg who killed himself, 15 years old, a cellist, killed himself after enduring years of bullying. And reading that story and then shortly thereafter reading about Billy Lucas, who may or may not have been gay, he wasn't publicly gay or gay identified, hadn't come out to anybody, but was viciously bullied for being gay by his peers. And at that moment, I just thought, what all gay people think when we read these stories, all adult gay people, I wish I could have talked to that kid for 5 minutes. And that was turning over in my head, and I went online and I wrote about it, and I was reading the comments on the post I wrote, and someone else said the exact same thing. Wish I could have talked to that kid for 5 seconds to tell him it gets better. And it occurred to me, just kind of in a flash, that we can talk to these kids now. We can use social media. We can use digital video and YouTube and directly address them. Because when a gay teenager commits suicide, what he's saying, or she's saying, is, I can't picture a future for myself that's happy, that's worth enduring this stage of my life and putting up with this bullying, I can't see happiness coming my way. And so many gay people went through that, many who attempted suicide, most who did not, and are leading really happy, fulfilling lives. And I thought, why not share? Not just like our shared stories of, you know, similar experiences of bullying, but share our joy, share our happiness, and give them hope for a future that's worth sticking around for. So my boyfriend and I made a video, and we put it up on YouTube, and we honest to God thought it would be, you know, get 100 views, and it would be just us. And there's a 500,000 views now, and hundreds of tapes from gays and lesbians all over the world.
Do you feel like the bullying that kids are suffering now as teenagers has gotten worse?
I do. And that sounds counterintuitive, but and it's getting better in the coasts, getting better in big cities. But there has been a really 15-year hate campaign waged by the religious right, demonizing gays and lesbians, insisting that we're trying to destroy the institution of marriage, we're attacking the family, anti-gay bile spills from the pulpits, the mouths of parents who may not even realize the kids in the room with them, their own children are gay and lesbian, homophobic remarks, comments, political paranoia. And this has an impact, not just on the gay kids in the room, but on the straight kids. These straight kids hear this, and then they feel they have license to brutalize and dehumanize the gay and lesbian children that they come across in their schools. They listen to their preachers and their parents, maybe even their school administrators, if they're in a Christian school or a public school that's being run by homophobic bigots, brutalize and dehumanize gays and lesbians rhetorically, and then they turn around and they act out on that. So I actually do think that, well, it's gotten a lot better to be gay or lesbian in, you know, most places, and it's much, much better to be a gay or lesbian adult now in most places, including a lot of rural and suburban areas. It's gotten worse for children.
You're harnessing social networking and the power of modern technology to get your message out. And we just heard recently the very sad case of a student at Rutgers University, Tyler Clementi, who was videotaped with another man by his roommate. And then that was sent out through the social network and he ended up committing suicide. Do you think that the kind of technology that kids have access to these days also makes the bullying worse?
Well, it's one more stick for kids to beat up the gay kid with, or, you know, straight kids who are different or nerdy or geeks are also bullied. Gay kids are four times likely to commit suicide, though, because when they go home, they're often bullied by their parents, whereas straight kids who are bullied at school, whose parents are usually on their side. It is another weapon in the bully's arsenal. I, looking at the Tyler Clemente case, I can't imagine that being exposed like that caused him to commit suicide all by itself. It has to have been the last straw. We need to find out what else was going on in Tyler Clemente's life. Had he come out to his family? Had he been rejected by them, or did he have their support? What was his experience in high school? It just looks like he reached the breaking point.
I was looking through the different responses to your video on YouTube, and one of the responses that I read said, you know, I love the video, I like your message, but when you tell kids to tough it out, does that mean that we as gay adults have failed because we can't make the world better, can't make the world safe for these kids?
Well, I had an email from a mother of a 13-year-old boy who's being bullied, who has gone to the school, gone to the administration, talked to the parents of the children who are bullying her child, and nothing has worked. You know, as gay adults, we can't fly into these places and kick down the doors of these schools and make a difference. Unfortunately, I think the message for many of these kids is only you are going to have to tough this out. While we work on, you know, anti-bullying legislation and anti-bullying programs and press for those things, in the meantime, there is no immediate solution besides look to the friends who love and support you for their love and support. Come out to your family and your parents and ask for their support if you think that it's safe.
Dan, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, and thank you for helping to get the word out, particularly in Iowa, where the religious right is stepping up the anti-gay hate campaign because of the just decision legalizing same-sex marriage in your state. And I hope that when people encounter homophobic bile and rhetoric that dehumanizes gay people, that they confront it and they think of the children in the room who may suffer and die because of it.
Dan Savage is a well-known author, and he writes the advice column Savage Love. He's the founder of the It Gets Better Project. You can find it on YouTube. You're listening to Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. And with me now is Ryan Romerman. He's the executive director of the Iowa Pride Network. Thank you for being here today, Ryan.
Thank you so much.
And this is something that you've seen firsthand as a young person when you were in high school growing up in Ottumwa, Iowa. Can you tell me what happened?
When I was growing up, I was not out in school, and I didn't come out in school because I didn't feel comfortable, I didn't feel safe. One of the reasons that was because I witnessed a lot of anti-gay bullying, and I felt that if I were to step in, I would then become a target. I in particular remember a young man who had been called a variety of slurs throughout his career at the high school. And in particular, I remember going into locker rooms and him just constantly being ridiculed just for the way he looked, the way he spoke. I don't even know if he was gay or not. But I'll never forget the day that I came to school and the principal came over with the announcement and had let us know that he had committed suicide. And I immediately thought to myself, what could I have done to have stopped the harassment? And that's always stayed with me, and it's been a very powerful reminder of why it's so important to stand up for your peers and to stand up for yourself. And it's one of the reasons why I do the work that I do with the Iowa Pride Network. The whole point of our organization is to network students, provide support to gay straight alliances, and try to make sure that we have a successful network of students. They don't feel isolated and they don't feel alone.
So people have a place to turn if they're experiencing that kind of bullying.
Exactly.
How big do you think this problem is of bullying in schools? Because we hear about these cases where someone commits suicide. Something extreme has to happen for this to make the news. But how prevalent is this problem?
You know, I think it's bigger than what we have heard in the media. Obviously, the media has picked up on these suicides, but there's so many, unfortunately, untold stories that don't get into the media spotlight. And we know it's a problem. It's becoming more prevalent. Partly for the fact that we do have a lot more media and social networks that students can use and bullies can use behind, a veiled screen. You know, they don't have to necessarily show their face, and they're saying things and doing things online that they normally would never do in person.
So it gives them a tool that they can use without having to get up the courage to say the things that they're saying.
Absolutely. And with the, you know, the new media, the Twitter, and we have Facebook, and we have all these different social outlets, students are not only getting barraged by more and more students that are willing to say things, again, that they normally wouldn't do, but they're having to fight to make sure that they have their rights to keep it. A lot of times, some people and some adults feel that the way to curb this kind of harassment is to not allow them to have Facebook, not allow them to have, access, you know, even in schools. And so I think a lot of students are trying to find a balance between reporting harassment with also knowing that they're fearing that they might lose some of their social networking privileges.
Well, we'll talk more about the problem of bullying and cyberbullying in a moment. My guest is Ryan Romerman. He's the executive director of the Iowa Pride Network. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about the problem of bullying and harassment of young people who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered. It's a problem that, again, has taken on urgency because of the recent suicide of a student at Rutgers University last week. And with me is Ryan Romerman. He's the executive director of the Iowa Pride Network. And joining us now is Jeremy Ude, who is an assistant professor of political science at the University of Minnesota in Duluth. He grew up in Cedar Falls, Iowa, and he's agreed to share his story with us today. Hello, Jeremy.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And I know that the comments directed at you, pardon me, the comments directed at you about your sexuality actually began very early when you were in elementary school and even from adults in your world. Can you tell us some of the things that happened to you?
Yeah, sure. Like you said, the first time I remember anyone calling me fag or faggot or anything along those lines, I was actually in third grade, and this was an elementary school teacher. I was waiting for the bus one day, and just I couldn't even tell you now what we were doing, but a teacher came up to me and said, excuse me, said, "Jeremy, stop acting like a fag," and then just kind of laughed and walked away. And so that, you know, and that was a teacher. That was a second grade teacher in the school. And so it started off at a very early point in my life. And then, you know, when I was in junior high, there were students who almost seemed to go out of their way to say something on a daily basis to try to put me down or to, you know, to threaten me or something along those lines.
When did you first understand that you were gay?
I started coming out to myself when I was about 14, 15, thereabouts. So right around that time of 9th, 10th grade. Prior to that, I had had some inklings. I'd been kind of wrestling with some of these ideas about my sexuality, but it was about the time I was 14 or 15 that I really kind of came to terms with it for myself.
So before you began to really understand that yourself, people were saying these things to you and using language about sexuality that was certainly very negative, meant to insult you. How did you feel when you were hearing those words, and how did you feel about the concept of being gay before you began to understand it?
Well, it was, in terms of how it made me feel, it was just, it was incredibly intimidating, and it was also fairly isolating. You know, this wasn't something that I was seeing that was happening to everyone. It wasn't that everyone in the school was getting called fag or getting called queer. And so it was, it promoted the sense of isolation and not exactly knowing where I could turn with this. You know, do I go to the teachers? Do I go to the school counselor? Do I say something directly to the students? Is that going to provoke more of a reaction? And then in terms of the message it gave to me, it wasn't exactly making for a comfortable environment for even contemplating these sorts of things or even having these sorts of questions going on in my mind. You know, what's going on in terms of my own sexuality? Like, it didn't really provide for an environment where I felt like this was something I could go talk to someone about or could find the sorts of resources that might have been helpful at that point in life.
When you did understand that you were gay, or in your terms, come out to yourself, did you come out to others as well?
I did. It was sort of a gradual process. Once I started to come out to myself, I started coming out to select close friends, in part just to build some sort of network, to know that there might be people out there who would have my back if things got rough.
Did you come out to your family?
Not really until I went away to college.
But you also came out to teachers and other adults that were supportive.
Yes. I had some teachers when I was in high school who again helped to create that network of support. And when push came to shove, when things got bad, I knew that I could turn to them and that they would be able to help me out.
The bullying and harassment got worse in high school. What kinds of things happened to you?
In high school, it was, you know, I was never actually beaten up, but there were more of the threats of physical violence that happened in high school. It would not be uncommon for me to go out to my car after school and to find it vandalized, you know, people smearing used tobacco or hamburgers or leaving notes underneath the windshield. And it eventually just became an almost everyday occurrence.
How did you cope with that?
Eventually, we just kind of had to laugh about it. It was one of those things that you know, my friends and I would just like, oh, I wonder if we're going to get vandalized today. And it was just a defensive reaction. You know, we're going to have to laugh about this because otherwise it's just going to make us completely miserable.
Were you afraid?
I wasn't so much afraid that someone was going to, that I was going to get beaten up as I was walking down the hallway, but it's just sort of the unknown. Not knowing when when something was going to come from someone else, or when the next the next time someone was going to yell queer at me, or the next time that someone was going to vandalize my car, the next time were they going to slash my tires, were they going to do something worse? So just sort of, it made me feel like I was constantly on edge, not knowing when the next shoe was going to drop.
Did you try to be careful about like being outside by yourself at times when there weren't other people around at school?
Not too much, but I think a lot of that was just by virtue of, you know, I kind of had a little pack and of friends, and we'd kind of travel in the same groups together.
What was it like when you graduated from high school and were able to leave that environment behind?
It was great. It was a lot of what the whole project, it gets better project, is talked about, that as you get out, you can take more control of your life. You can put yourself in environments that really speak to you and address the needs that you have. And so going from high school to college, I could get away from those people who would constantly harass me, and I could really start to make my own way in the world and take control in a way that I hadn't before.
And you sought out an environment after high school that you felt would be friendly to you.
Definitely. That was something that when I was going through the whole process of trying to find colleges, that was something that was really important to me, and something that wasn't, it's not something that I was necessarily saying directly to admissions officers or anything like that, but just going on campus tours and trying to get a sense of what's going on. You know, I was trying to suss out the environment and find an environment that not only had what I needed academically, but also someplace that I felt like socially I was going to be comfortable, that I could you know, live my life and be myself for the next 4 years.
And you found that at Grinnell College.
Right.
And what, you are an assistant professor now of political science, and mm-hmm. you live in the Twin Cities. You commute mm-hmm. to Duluth. You're also in a committed relationship?
Yes.
How long have you and your partner been together?
We've been together a little over 9 years now.
If you could talk to 16-year-old Jeremy, what would you tell him?
I think I would tell him that it's not going to get worse. That these goals that you have, these ideas that you have about what your future career is going to look like, your future family, all these sorts of things, that you can still you can achieve these things. That these are not things that you have to compromise on necessarily just because you've realized that you're gay. So stick it out. Make sure that you have those networks, rely on those networks to the extent that you can, and keep your eye on the fact that you do have this opportunity to really take control of your life.
And what do you think, or we're going to talk a lot more about this with Ryan Romerman, but what do you think adults can do to help these young people who are going through those kind of struggles right now?
Well, I think, just thinking about my own experience, the thing that was so important about those teachers and those adults that provided the support for me was just that they had really made an effort to make themselves available to all students. That it wasn't something that a teacher ever sought me out and said, I think you might be gay and I know that this could be hard for you. I think that would have completely freaked me out as a 14, 15, or 16-year-old. But these were teachers who just had a very were very open and made it known to all students that if they were having any sort of problem, if there's any sort of conflict going on in their lives, that they were people that they could turn to. And that was something that was that provided me with a place when I needed people, that I had a sense, okay, these might be the people that I can turn to. And by not even necessarily being completely overt about that, but just saying, you know, I'm available to speak with you, that provided a lifeline in a lot of respects. And then when I did approach those people, they took me seriously, and they would have conversations with me, and they would help me out as far as they could.
Jeremy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity.
Jeremy Yood is an assistant professor of political science at the University of Minnesota in Duluth. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. And with me today also is Ryan Romerman, the executive director of the Iowa Pride Network. And just as Jeremy was talking about how when he was in elementary school, he actually was had a homosexual slur thrown at him by a teacher when he was in third grade. We got an email here from, it's an anonymous email, but it says, sometimes it's the adults who lead the bullying. In our small school, it's the teachers and administrators who lead the bullying of gay students. Is that something you hear about quite a bit, Ryan?
Well, you know, I think it really goes back to the fact that to change a school environment really has to start at the top. And I think administrators need to really set the tone. And as Jeremy mentioned, it's such an important lifeline to have teachers and administrators and staff who show that they are willing to make sure that all students are safe. And so I definitely think that that's something that's important. I will say that we do a school climate survey every 2 years. We did one in 2005, 2007, and 2009. One of the things that we did see, however, was a lot of teachers actually starting to intervene more when homophobic remarks are made in their presence. So that's a good thing. So we are seeing that in Iowa, more teachers are intervening.
I want to talk a little bit more about cyberbullying and the internet. When I was in college, people who I knew who were members of the GLBT community often really relied on the internet. And of course, it was a little more archaic than the internet relay chat, whatever was going on. But it was something that they relied on because they could reach out to people who were experiencing similar things without making themselves very vulnerable, without risking rejection or risking telling the wrong person about their sexuality. So do you find that the internet does really offer a lot of students who are going through these struggles a community they can be a part of?
Absolutely. And I think it's definitely a resource that I used when I was starting to come out. And I hope that through our website, a lot of students find us and the support that we can provide them as well. What we do know from our 2009 school climate survey is that LGBT students continue to be harassed at a higher rate than their straight peers. And, for example, they're two times as likely to have been cyberbullied sometime in the last year. And so we do know that while this is a medium that definitely helps students find and connect, it can also be a double-edged sword in the sense that, as we mentioned before, bullies can be veiled behind their computer screens. So it's something that LGBT students, I think, are still continuing to try to navigate.
What kinds of problems have you seen with cyberbullying taking place in Iowa?
Well, you know, we have had students that have been the targets on Facebook where students have created, pages that demonize an LGBT student, and the school has tried to interact and intervene as much as possible. So we've definitely experienced an uptick in the number of those kinds of situations.
How do you help if you find out about a situation and they come to you? How do you intervene and help in a school?
Well, one of the things that we do is we make sure that the school, first of all, is aware of the problem. The school, especially in the age of cyberbullying, oftentimes one of the things that we receive from the school and feedback is, how do we deal with cyberbullying in the sense that we have enough stuff to worry about in the school, let alone what's happening outside. And so what we're trying to do is make sure that the school officials are aware of specific fan pages, especially if they are talking about physical violence, things like that. Because once the school is aware, they have a legal obligation to intervene in whatever way they can to stop this kind of harassment, so the student can actually go on to school and try to get good grades.
I've noticed in looking through all of the different activities that the Iowa Pride Network is involved in that one of the big thrusts of your work is getting gay-straight alliances mm-hmm. into schools. What is a gay-straight alliance?
A gay-straight alliance is an alliance of gay and straight students working to end homophobia and transphobia in their school.
And tell me how you would go into a school and facilitate setting up a group like that.
Well, what's really nice about our movement is when we were founded in 2003, there were only about 20 gay-straight alliances in high schools and colleges. We now have over 100, and they're all student-led. So it's actually student groups and students that actually contact us, and then we start to work with the student in their school. And that's the process in which they begin. And they begin wanting to create gay-straight alliance because of cases like these. They start to see their peers in the media who are committing suicide, who are trying to find resources. And, you know, we have gay-straight alliances in Iowa that are made completely up of straight students because they're tired of seeing their gay friends getting harassed. And so what these student groups do provide is a safe space for them to be protected and confident that there are other people there that support them. What we do know is that today in Iowa, about 20% of LGBT students reported some incident of physical assault, meaning that they're either being punched, kicked, or injured with a weapon. And we do know that if they have a gay-straight alliance in their school, they're 23% less likely to be physically assaulted. So what we know is that this is a very cost-effective, smart, efficient way to make sure the students are safe in their school.
When a student group comes to you and then they say, we've started this gay-straight alliance, we need some support, what can you do to facilitate?
Well, what we try to do is make sure that they are going through the same kind of protocols any other student group would do. But the other important thing, that and one of the big satisfactory points of my job, is when I'm able to talk to a student about their federal rights. There's the Federal Equal Access Act that was actually signed in 1984 by President Ronald Reagan. And what it basically states is that if you're in a public school and there's other non-curricular clubs meeting, even just one, and a student wants to start a gay-straight alliance, they have a legal federal right to start one. And if a school tries to intervene or stop that or provide extra roadblocks for that group forming, they could lose federal funding. And oftentimes when I'm talking to a student about that, a light goes off because they start to understand their rights. And so when I heard Dan Savage, for example, talk about how there's no immediate thing that can be done, Well, I understand that he's kind of talking about long term over generations and decades. I think right now one of the things that can be done is having a student start a Gay Straight Alliance, or the simple fact that making sure that schools and teachers are aware of how to appropriately help and intervene and assist students who might be going through these kinds of struggles.
Have you, in facilitating these groups, do you encounter schools that do put up a lot of roadblocks to starting these groups?
You know, we have. And what we generally try to do is we try to help students work through existing channels as much as possible. For the most part, schools in Iowa have been fantastic about making sure that if a student wants to start a Gay Straight Alliance, they're very supportive. And so, but we have, like I said, run into some roadblocks with a few schools. And again, trying to make sure that students work through existing channels. We never had to take any school to court. Generally, what it consists of is a letter that says, hey, these students know their federal rights, and usually within a day they have a Gay Straight Alliance. And what we try to do is make sure that our students are working in conjunction with those teachers, because again, most teachers want the best thing for their students, and most aren't trying to put up roadblocks. They just maybe are not completely aware of the law. And so that's kind of how we work with them, but we also work on them, everything from programming to, you know, how to set up events, even how to run a meeting.
We're talking today about the problem of bullying and harassment of young people who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered. My guest is Ryan Romerman. He's the executive director of the Iowa Pride Network. And we've also been hearing some personal stories today. We'd love to hear your story. If you have one to share, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about the problem of bullying or harassment of young people who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered, particularly in high school. My guest is Ryan Romerman, who's the executive director of the Iowa Pride Network, and joining us now is Teresa Combs. She is a student in early childhood education at Kirkwood Community College, also the mother of two young children, and she grew up in Burlington, Iowa. Teresa, thank you so much for agreeing to share your story today.
Thanks for having me.
When did you first understand that you were a lesbian?
Well, thinking back, I know that it was very natural, organic for me to want to play house as a young child and not have there be a dad, have there be me. I'm the mom and you're going to be the mom, you know, and it was just very natural for me to have that sort of play. And then growing up, it became stronger and stronger. But I was more scared of it the older I got, because just things I would hear, and I didn't really know anybody else who was, so.
Well, and you had a really striking experience when you first actually discovered what it meant to be gay. Can you tell me what happened that night?
Absolutely. In seventh grade, I was 12 years old. I was babysitting for a family, and the children had gone to bed, and it was about 9 o'clock, and 2020 was starting, and Barbara Walters was doing a special on gay bashing, and I started watching it, and my heart started racing, and I was like, wow. Well, this is me, and this is what happens. And, you know, they showed pictures, and it was pretty graphic, and that was my entire world at that moment. This is what's going to happen to me. That's what I was thinking. I'm going to tell somebody, or somebody already knows, or somebody's going to find out, and that's how my life's going to end. That's what's going to happen. I mean, I had no other, you know.
Yeah. So you really, you discovered what it meant to be gay, and you thought because you had those feelings, you were going to be murdered. I mean, it was that stark.
Right. That was the only story I had, you know, to go on. I didn't know anything else at that point.
And that really affected you physically and emotionally for quite some time.
Right. I was sick for days on end. My mom just thought I had the flu. I was vomiting. I was basically just in a state of fear and paranoia. And, you know, eventually I did tell her after a few days, and she just, you know, said, oh, it's just your hormones. You know, you're going through puberty. It's fine. You're not gay. And the same thing happened again around age 14. I told her again. And this time I could physically tell. I mean, I'm past that point. I physically know that I am attracted to women. And it was just brushed off again as being hormonal, and that everybody goes through this. And, you know, it wasn't taken as seriously as it probably should have been.
And in high school, you were picked on, but not necessarily for your sexuality.
Right, exactly. I didn't come out until a few months before I graduated, and it was to a select few. And some of those people were already out, and some of them weren't. But yeah, I was harassed by a group of girls who I was very close to for the first couple of years in high school. And then I'm not really sure what happened, but I was a chosen target, and it went on for about a year and a half. And it was the hardest thing I've ever been through in my life. It was, you know, I can't remember who was saying it before, was saying things happened to their car.
Yeah.
You know, you would go outside and there'd be food on the car and there'd be a tire slashed. And it was just day after day. And they would yell things at me in the hallway and throw pencils at me. And I had classes with these girls, and they would, you know, tell stories to other people in the classroom. And so I couldn't make more friends, but hold on to ones that I did have that I had had longer than them. So I had a very small group of friends that, you know, I had held on to and were pretty great through the whole thing. But I was scared to come out then because I had these friends who I, you know, had this whole time and didn't want them to maybe use that as a, okay, well, she is gay, so I can't be friends with her now. So it was also out of fear, again, to not tell these few people who I was friends with.
And you did have a friend in high school who was gay and out and
exactly.
Horribly bullied.
Yes, it was relentless, and he eventually wrote a story for the school paper and talked about it. And, you know, I think a lot of people read it and thought about it. Nothing really happened after that. It was just maybe talked about for like a week. It was, you know, nothing came of it. There was no group that started because of it. There was no support group. There was no talk from the teachers about it. There was nothing like that.
And there was no support from teachers or administrators for those of you who were being bullied?
Absolutely not. I definitely told administrators several times. My parents had come in, I believe, three times that last semester, actually. And the most that was done with it is they sat me in a room with two of the girls and put on a tape recorder and left the room and said, work it out. And that was it. And here, you know, these people are my biggest fear, and they're sitting, you know, 5 feet in front of me. And it was just horrible. It was a horrible way to have somebody work through something. That's not how it goes, you know.
You did come out shortly after you graduated from high school. Mm-hmm. And you
to everyone.
And right. you told your mom, and she understood that time. What was her reaction?
She took me seriously because I told her I'd already been dating somebody for a couple of months. So at this point, that's what was going on. There was no stopping it. There was no, oh, you're going through puberty. I mean, I was an adult. And right around the same time, my sister came out. She's 8 years older than me. And she came out to our mother and to all of her friends. And so that was a nice support system, that we had this thing that we were going through together and at different parts in our life, but at the same time.
So I asked Jeremy this question. I'll ask you, if you could talk to 14, 15, or 16-year-old Teresa, what would you want to say to her?
I would say, you know, you're never going to see those people again, ever. They're going to stay in that small town. You're going to get out right after you graduate, and there's going to be a lot of wonderful things that happen.
A lot of the people that I reached out to for this program, I reached out to a number of people who are in the GLBT community, who grew up in Iowa, who I knew through college and through high school, and to ask them if they would tell their stories. And honestly, most of them have moved out of the state. They've moved to larger urban areas. A lot of them live in the Twin Cities or in New York City, places where it's known that there are large gay communities.
Yeah.
Why have you stayed in Iowa?
I really liked it here. I've built some roots, you know. I have a lot of support here. I have a family now, and my partner and I have friends from years and years ago, and there's just not a big reason to leave. There's a big gay, queer, you know, community here that we feel totally accepted in. We feel very comfortable with raising our children here. It's talked about in the school system. I don't think that it's something that's hidden, you know. Yeah, we just feel really comfortable with staying here and knowing that our children will have a wonderful experience as well. They're not going to be the only children with two moms, or, you know.
Right. Teresa, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
And you're going to stay with us through the rest of the program. Also, Ryan Romerman is here, Executive Director of the Iowa Pride Network. And we have a number of callers who want to share their experiences. And if you'd like to call us, the number is 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Don is on the line from Davenport. Hello, Don.
Hello, hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Excuse me. Yeah, well, this is an excellent, excellent show, excellent topic. I actually grew up in Chicago, and I moved here out of choice a number of years ago. But my experience was I did feel really isolated growing up. I mean, I'm openly gay now. I'm 46. So this is, we're talking quite a few years ago, and I grew up in the public schools but then switched over to the private schools for junior high and high school. And one of the callers talked about, you know, he wasn't out either, and that wouldn't even have crossed my radar scope back then. I mean, that was a long time ago. There was no will and grace. There was no support system that I felt whatsoever. But I got bullied for other things, and I think the thing that I experienced was, there is no way I would give them one more thing to bully me over. I mean, they got bullied because I wasn't into sports. I walked funny. And I did hear the word fag and things like that quite a bit. Although I think, like it is today, I think that was just more of a thing to call somebody when you wanted to call them a name. But I think the shame of that, of being gay, kept me, you know, within myself, and it's, oh, well, this is, of course, one more thing, I just really, in some ways, I think it is easier today, but unlike what Dan Savage was saying, I think just toughing it out, I don't think that's necessarily the my mom would say, you know, when I was bullied, yo, just don't worry about it. Well, that doesn't do a lot for a kid, you know? I mean, you need to have that social, that support network. I mean, I survived, but the scars of that are still with me.
How do you think those scars are still with you?
I'm sorry?
How do you think the scars have stayed with you?
When I see kids start to kind of, you know, gang up on somebody, or if I think they might be coming at me, or not so much kids, but I mean, you know, adults, or, you know, I like teasing, I like going back and forth, but there's that certain part of me when I feel like somebody's ganging up on me or whatever, a couple people, I revert back to that kid, and I feel the same way, like, oh my gosh, you know. I couldn't even go to the bathroom when I was in sixth grade in school because they would get me in there, you know, and push me around and, you know, throw things at me or whatever. And so I couldn't even go to the bathroom in school after a while because I was so scared of getting bullied. And really, the administrators, my mom complained about it, which, you know, and there really isn't a lot that they did. And I don't know if that's changed much, but those feelings don't go away. I have got a huge network of friends. I mean, I'm very sociable. I'm very out to all my friends and family. And it does get better, or it can get better. But, you know, some of those scars, they really, really don't go away. I'm very sensitive to when I think the mood is changing, or when I'm, you know, when I'm with people, and if I think that I choose my friends very, very right, wisely, and I really haven't had negative experiences per se. I mean, I've really been fortunate in that, but I really choose my friends and social networks very carefully because of that.
Don, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. And Laura from Cedar Rapids has a question, Ryan, that I'm sure you've encountered before. Hello, Laura.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have two sons who are now college age, but had many times the experience when they were in middle school and high school of them coming home and having been accused, and I put that word in quotation marks, of being gay. And they were doubly conflicted by this. On the one hand, they were hurt by being accused of being something they were not, and that could have been anything. That could have been a racial slur. That could have been something made up. But they were also then conflicted by, why do I have to deny this thing and thereby hurt my friends who are gay? Even when they didn't know they had friends who were gay, they understood that denying being gay, denying being something they were not, was going to be hurtful to people they didn't want to hurt.
Ryan, how do you respond to that? You know, if you're a parent and your child is going through something like this, a bullying like this, and it happens to be about sexual identity, which they may or may not be gay, how as a parent should you react?
Well, you know, first of all, I think you raised two great sons in the fact that they're actually even thinking of that and being that self-aware. So congratulations. And I think secondly, there's a number of students that get picked on for being perceived to be gay, whether because they like art instead of basketball, as we heard one of the other callers talk about in terms of not being as athletic. And so I think for that, it's just making sure that when they are talking to their peers and if they are getting harassed because of that, whether you're gay or straight, that kind of homophobic and anti-gay harassment should not be taking place. And so my response, if I was a parent, would be to say, you know, let's make sure that officials are aware of this because, you know, it's going to hurt gay or straight people. And I think that's something that your sons mentioned. And I also just want to mention the fact that, you know, I do think things are changing in the United States. We were just invited to the first ever Federal Partners in Bullying Prevention Summit in Washington, D.C. last month. And when you have Secretary of Education Arne Duncan declaring that bullying and harassment is a public health crisis in America, I think you can sense that the tone is changing, that hearts and minds are starting to understand that, oh, bullying and harassment isn't just something that we all go through. In this day and age, with especially in regards to cyberbullying, there's so many other venues that students are being bombarded with in terms of harassment that I think we are seeing a tidal shift in how people view harassment and bullying in schools.
Well, and some people might be wondering why we've spent this hour talking specifically about bullying of children in this community, in the GLBT community, when bullying is such a prevalent problem of children in all communities. And why is this a more serious problem for kids who are struggling with their sexuality?
Well, what we know from our school climate survey is that specifically they are being sought out for specific harassment. They're much more likely, and I think it's because it's gender norms, social norms. I think anybody that doesn't fit into the stereotypical box, they get chosen to be harassed. And that, again, could be whether you are gay or perceived to be. What we do know, though, is that cyberbullying, those kinds of things affect all students. Students who had been cyberbullied were about four times as likely to skip class and about three times as likely to stay home. So we know that this kind of stuff in Iowa and the nation is affecting students' educational aspirations. And that's why I think you see things like Iowa Safe Schools Law being brought into practice. And one of the things we're working on is to make sure that schools are implementing it with fidelity.
A lot of us who hear these stories, like Tyler Clementi's story, the student who committed suicide at Rutgers, you hear the story and you feel the pain and feel sad about it. But there's also a feeling of helplessness. What can we do to help kids who are going through this?
Well, you know, I think one of the most important things that students can do for themselves is make sure that their friends are acting on their behalf as well. Bystanders and students' friends are some of the most effective ways to prevent bullying, and it's making sure that they're engaged. And I think when they're seeing, like I mentioned before, their peers may not necessarily went to their school, but they hear about bullying and harassment to where students are committing suicide, I think you're seeing students become more engaged in understanding that when they hear anti-gay remarks and that kind of harassment, that they stop it. They must intervene, because as a student who was gay growing up, if I had had that kind of support, if I had done that for my friend, I can only imagine what we might have been able to do for that person and what someone could have done for me in terms of making me feel comfortable to be who I am. And so that, I think, on a student level is the most important. And I think at the adult level, making sure that you're in tune with your young people, making sure that you're listening to them, but making sure that you're taking an active role in their education, and especially teachers, making sure that they are stopping anti-gay bullying when it happens.
And if someone has a child who's experiencing this kind of harassment, where do they turn?
They can certainly call the Iowa Pride Network office, and you can find us at www.iowapridenetwork.org.
All right. Ryan, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Ryan Roberman is the executive director of the Iowa Pride Network. Also with us today, Teresa Combs, a student in early childhood education at Kirkwood Community College. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.